to another episode of the Religious Studies Project. I'm Christopher Carter. He's
David Robertson, and we're presented in association with the BASR.
Didn't know what direction that was going. you've been speaking to T.S. Helm on social constructionism.
I have. Shall we just cut to the recording?
Do it.
I'm here today in University College London to speak to T.S. Helm, who is a lecturer in Finnish society and culture here at University College, and this is the second time he's been interviewed for the Religious Studies Project. Today we're going to talk about social constructionism, something which is very important to contemporary social sciences generally, study of religion we're going to be talking about particularly today, but seems to be something that students in particular have difficulty getting their head round. So, first of all, welcome back to the Religious Studies Project.
Thank you.
And let's start with the perhaps deceptively simple question of what is social constructionism?
Right. being somebody who's written a book about it, I should have a clear and concise
response. Written the book on it.
Yeah. But, well, actually, one of the reasons why I wrote the book was that the term in different forms, constructivism, constructionism, social constructivism, and, you know, all variations of that, is kind of passed around a lot. Sort of everyone has a sense of what constructionism is, but that sense might be very different from what the next person has in mind. So my idea with the book was first to kind of try to sort of outline the most important senses in which the term has been used so far, and also highlight the fact that there is no one social constructionism.
Right.
That's why the book is called Social Constructionism's
Yes.
Approaches to the Study of the Human World. And kind of the basic that's the basic argument of the book, that we should not actually talk about constructionism as a singular thing, but rather as plural, as constructionisms. And the one thing that kind of unites the different kind of approaches, which are sometimes sort of almost opposite, is the idea, and that's why I find the term human world useful, is the idea that there is a world which would not exist without humans in it. That's the human world. And things in that human world are not inevitable and sort of regulated by similar laws as the natural world. So the idea of contingency is very important, that things could be otherwise. There is nothing inevitable with the political system we have today, the economic system we have today, or the way religion is treated and considered in the world today. So contingency is kind of the first important thing. The second important thing is the idea that constructionism, with this idea of contingency, comes the idea of critique.
Mm-hmm.
That when we know, when we realize, when we recognize that in the human world things could be otherwise if we thought about them in different ways, if we understood them in different ways, if we defined them differently, then that opens an avenue for critiquing current conditions and the ways in which we understand, say, religion, for example, in modern societies. So that's the other thing. There was a third thing, I think, in the introduction, but I can't remember what it was. And I think those two kind of cover up.
Well, it gives us a good start. I'm sure we'll get to the third one in good time. I mean, this kind of social constructivist, or these social constructivist approaches, they're highly closely related to the whole critical project more broadly, aren't they? I mean, I'm thinking of Bourdieu and Foucault and these kind of people.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And sort of And I think it's a good thing, but I also think it's there are big differences in what people mean by critical.
Okay.
I think the different main difference is that between what I call in the book, I call kind of two different positions on constructionism. The other one is what I call the world in discourse position, which basically claims that since we can't talk about the world beyond discourse, the world only exists in discourse.
Yeah.
That it's like an ontologically empty
right.
world, because the only way we can describe it is by discourse. Hence, everything in the world is discursive, and we can only reach the world through discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one sense of critical. Whereas the other position that I call discourse in the world,
okay.
First of all, takes the natural world as something that works according to slightly different laws than the human world, whereas the human world doesn't quite work in clear laws in the same sense in the first place, but also that there are certain structures in the social world, in the human world, that limit our ways of talking about things, so limit the ways in which discourse can be used, and that is critical in the sort of broadly Marxist Bourdieu kind of approach, which recognizes the constructedness of the world, but also recognizes the kind of human-made structures that limit the kind of the boundaries of construction.
So in one model, perhaps the more sort of radical version, we have kind of only discourse.
Mm.
But in this other version, there is an ontologically real world, perhaps, of things.
Yeah.
But the human world, could we say culture, that is just discourses. Would that be fair?
Well, I mean, I would say that the human world, which is the social and the cultural or whatever alternative you want to use it, in that sense, but it's not just discursive. It's a lot of it is discursive, but also through discourse we create social structures, say class, for example. Mm-hmm. So, you know, class is something that we can't sort of touch. It's not out there like, you know, atoms and sort of rocks or whatever in the natural world. But still, it is something that limits our capabilities in terms of discourse. So,
so could we say it was real in a sense then?
Yeah, absolutely. I think although the book kind of does not take a strong stance in terms of what kind of constructionism is, you know, good or better than the other, I tend to sort of gravitate towards the critical in the sort of realist sense of the word. I mean, if I wanted to be fashionable, I probably would call myself a critical realist. That's very fashionable at the moment, and I think that these guys are onto something. What I don't like about much of the discussion is their kind of wholesale dismissive attitude towards constructionism. The better critical realists actually think that we need to talk about both. I like to call myself a critical constructionist, so I start with the idea that construction is important, but we need to be aware of those actually real structures out there that are human-made, but are still have an effect on the ways in which we can talk about things.
Bruno Latour's got quite an interesting take on that sort of... I don't know if he'd call himself a critical realist, probably not.
No.
But he's... there's an interesting way in which he really problematizes the whole distinction between, you know, what's real and what's constructed.
Mm.
But, you know, he would say, you know, well, it, you know, it's all constructed, so doesn't that kind of all make it equally real as well?
Yeah, critical realists seem to have a, you know, big beef with Latour and sort of actor network theory. And I'm not entirely, I haven't followed the discussion closely enough to say what their sort of issue mostly is. I think it has to do with agency most of all, that sort of And my problem, and that might be, I'm not a Latour expert, so I can't really comment on that, but my kind of problem with the everything is discourse approach is exactly that. That if everything is discourse, how can we, where is the kind of, if everything is discourse and nothing is real, where is the position that we can take to critique those constructions?
Yeah.
So, for example, I mean, you know, if I'm trying to come up with a good example here, but which I can't do at the moment. But basically, my point is that I do think there's a problem with saying that everything is discourse, because then that doesn't quite explain, to me at least, how then certain kinds of stratifications happen in the world. If everybody is equally capable of changing the world through discourse, how come there are so clear, solid stratifications in the world, whether it's class or gender difference or sexual discrimination or something like that? And I think that requires something more than just everything is discourse.
I've heard this in certain philosophers call this kind of point in the argument tables and hearts, because people will either start hitting the table and saying, well, I know this is real and not discourse, or they'll pat their chest and say, well, I know here that there's more to life than just discourse. But do you think it is quite a frightening prospect, isn't it? You know, the idea that everything is contingent and it's discourse turtles all the way down. I mean, maybe that's part of the reason that this sort of way of thinking is so resisted.
Yeah, I mean, but sort of, I think, and I do think, I mean, I'm sort of, kind of, I'm a recovering postmodernist myself, so I kind of know what you can think even seriously, and how wrong you can be in many ways. So I mean, I'm kind of happy that the worst excesses of that kind of postmodernism or post-structuralism are sort of, at least in social theory and sociology, they are kind of dead, if you want to put it strongly. I think the questions the postmodernists or post-structuralists posed were very important questions and good provocations, but I think there was this kind of complacency about things, that now that we know everything is constructed, we can just sort of, you know, ignore all those folks that say otherwise.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that we've kind of, you know, come away from those kind of excesses. And I think that the kind of opposition to constructionism is especially because of those excesses. That, you know, everything is just talk. There is no action anymore. That you know, people just talk, but they don't do anything. And that seems to be blatantly problematic for the social world. And that's why, as a sociologist, as a constructionist sociologist, I'm not only interested in text. I'm not a textual scholar. I don't consider myself a textual scholar. Mm. I consider myself studying discourses in contexts. What people do when they say something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always what people do when they say something. It's not just what they say. It's also who says it, what kind of social position that person speaks from, who the person speaks to, what is the audience reaction, what is the possibility of reaching the audience in the first place, access to media, access to whatever. That's the difference between text and discourse as something in context.
Yeah. What's the power relationship behind the writing of that text?
Yes.
Is this an authoritative person from the top down laying down how we should see things, or is it a subversive attempt to undermine that from underneath?
Yeah. I think power is central to the study of discourse, and there are two ways of understanding it. I mean, the other is the textual bit, where texts in themselves rhetorically, discursively create sort of ideological meanings of things, where alternative versions of events, for example, are sort of ironed out of the story.
Yeah.
And so that's power in the text.
That's
in
kind
discourse.
Of Foucault archaeology. Yeah.
But I do think we need to go beyond that, because it makes a massive difference, you know, whether something considering the Catholic Church is said by a layman and or the Pope, for example. Absolutely, you know, yeah. there's a very big difference. Mm-hmm. A layman who doesn't have access to media, or even if the person does, if she's a woman, mm-hmm. that makes a difference, and then there's the Pope. So I think it's just, you know, willful shutting of our eyes if we don't recognize that power also exists beyond that textual frame.
Yeah. That's a really good introduction, I think, to the social constructivist kind of approach in sociology. Let's bring that in now to the study of religion and how this is important. I think we've given one example already there about why this kind of approach is important, but is there any broader critique you would want to present as to why this is an important approach?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of the study of religion, both when I say study of religion, I mean it in the broad sense of sociology of religion and religious studies both, because I kind of straddle the two worlds, I consider myself first and foremost a sociologist, but in this country especially, that they're so close that it sometimes doesn't make sense to...
We don't draw a big distinction with the IRS.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, in the study of religion, I think in all of the chapters in the book, I have what I call a case study. And for the kind of sociology of knowledge, which I, you know, use as one example of construction, I talk about Berger's theory and discussion about religion, mostly in the sacred canopy. Mm-hmm. Berger is a good example of that. He actually has a kind of a constructionist theory of religion. But both in his own writings and especially in the ways that people have used his work, that seems to kind of disappear.
Yeah.
Becomes
completely sort of essentialized.
Because he talks about, when he talks about the sociology of knowledge, he says that we're not interested in ideas, the kind of, you know, Karl Mannheim thing where sociology of knowledge was about ideas and sort of intellectuals who mm-hmm. produced those ideas. But Berger and Lachmann were interested in whatever passes for knowledge in society. So the sociology of knowledge should be interested in whatever passes for knowledge in society. And I'm thinking both Berger himself and certainly people who use the word constructionism in the study of religion have completely missed the point that sociology of religion should be the study of whatever passes for religion in society.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's a completely under sort of employed idea. So people use construction in various senses, but I don't think that it's been massively employed in an empirical sense, that we actually study the meanings people give to religion. Jim Beckford is one of the few people that has actually mm-hmm. written about this kind of constructionist idea. And considering how old constructionism as a sort of a recognized theoretical strand is, more than 50 years now, it's a bit bizarre that, you know, we still don't have sort of a particular constructionist sociology of religion or mm-hmm. religious studies. The sense in which people do talk about construction specifically in religious studies is this sort of kind of what I see as a meta-theoretical discussion. So there's a lot of talk about how scholars construct religion.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if I look at this kind of what it's called critical religious studies in the last 15 years, it's all about other scholars.
Mm-hmm.
And although I think every discipline and every field needs that kind of sort of internal reflective critical discussion, I don't think it can be the only mm-hmm. discussion. I mean, we need to move beyond talking about other scholars and talking about what people say when they talk about religion.
Yeah.
What they mean when they talk about religion.
But there is a problem. I mean, that kind of J.Z. Smith and later approach, it hasn't trickled down to the ordinary level of the sociologist of religion. And they're, by and large, still talking about this monumental ontological being of religion, you know, that we this thing that we study.
Yeah.
And when you do get these sort of critical meta-reflections, then, you know, it's other critical scholars that are engaged in it, and it doesn't seem to be trickling down. Is that because we're so invested in this idea of religion as a discipline? I mean, is that why it is?
Well, partly the problem seems to be, although, I mean, I would say that, you know, if you compare, the problem with studies, whenever something's called studies, that's potentially problematic because it can basically essentialize the object of your studies by just a term.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think, but on the other hand, if you compare religious studies with gender studies, for example, it's almost like the two opposite poles because, you know, religious studies has this history of essentializing of religion as, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. sui generis or whatever. And gender studies has almost from the beginning started with exactly the opposite starting point, that gender is a construction,
yeah.
that all of these social arrangements that we have had gender-wise are actually contingent and not in any way natural or whatever. I mean, that has, of course, to do with the very different histories of two disciplines. And religious studies comes from theology, which kind of, you know, would be shooting itself in the foot if it started with the idea that, you know, religion isn't quite real in the sense that, you know, we would use the term in you know, with natural science and then, you know, something like that. And I think that's a you know, what is surprising is that discussion, we still need to have that discussion now.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought that discussion was, you know, late 19th century stuff,
yeah.
Maybe early 20th century stuff. But apparently the field, maybe the field is too inclusive. Maybe religious studies as a field is just too inclusive because it includes everything from sort of constructive theology and sort of practical theology, church-based theology to critical studies. That's maybe we need to have these constructionist critics within. But it's just, I just think that we would need to move forward from that.
Yeah.
And there's always a place for that kind of meta discussion. I think, you know, that meta theoretical. What is the discipline about? What theories should we talk about? But I think the unfortunate thing that has happened is that that constructionism is almost exclusively associated with that kind of metacritique,
yeah.
rather than as something that could be applied to the empirical world as well.
And I think that's in part to do with the makeup of the field. I mean, as well as the sort of inclusiveness, you also have this increasing stratification into, you know, a religious studies department being five or six area studies people, yeah. and maybe one of them is interested in theory, but the theory person is the theory person. Everybody else is more or less, you know, I'm making huge sweeping generalizations to make a point, but they by and large go along in their little subfield and never really think about the critical reflections.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because, I mean, von Stuckrad's work in particular has made a strong case for how this kind of constructivist approach can really help move the field forward. It can really get us out of this dead end of arguing about what religion is to an approach closer to what you were saying there, where we look at discourse on religion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm completely with Kokua on this one, and I think the kind of, you know, looking at, I mean, discourse and construction are intimately intertwined. So, I mean, I think, in the book, in the introduction, I say that, you know, you can understand constructionism without talking about discourse. I mean, Berger and Luckman don't really talk about discourse much, but I think you'll understand it better when you think it in terms of discourse.
Yeah.
The problem, of course, with discourse is that it has also as many definitions as you know, religion probably has. So, I mean, so there's that problem. But I think definitely we should move from simply theoretical discussion to actually looking at the discursive constructions of religion out there,
mm-hmm.
not just by other scholars, but actually out there.
Yeah.
And there's some good sort of emerging work. I mean, if you go to conferences, you see increasingly sort of interesting, good stuff. So I'm sort of hoping that the ideas will be picked up and there will be kind of a natural change in the field. But that's, of course, constrained by the kind of, especially in religious studies, by the kind of definition of the field along the kind of world religions paradigm, which is problematic in many ways. I mean, it's useful in some ways, but problematic in many other ways.
Mm.
So it remains to be seen whether this kind of discursive constructionist approach in empirical studies can ever kind of break free of that mold.
Yeah, given the quite severe sort of institutional restraints on this kind of deconstructing. I want to ask you, and I have no idea what you're going to say about this, but this is something, looking through your book and we were talking about earlier on, when you talked about sociology of knowledge, and I'm thinking of sort of Foucault's idea of these epistemes, that there are different times, different places, different contexts. We have these different constructions, the social constructions of reality, which kind of define what we know and how we know and how we can express, you know, our interactions with whatever ontological reality is there or isn't there. And I would like to take that a little bit further into the study of religion, because it seems to me it's a very interesting way of challenging the sort of dichotomy that we have between knowledge and kind of belief. It seems to me a lot of the time, especially when you look back on this early studies of religion, that a lot of the time when we're talking about religion and beliefs and rituals and kind of things, we're really just talking about the particular epistemes, the particular construction of knowledge that the other has. And it would be very interesting to take that, this kind of approach and the sort of social construction of knowledge, and apply it to religion, non-religion, and, you know, the vast majority of cases that are somewhere in between. What do you think of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, I mean, and that's, of course, what's kind of this kind of meta-theoretical stuff has been doing in a way, that, you know, how we have, as Westerners who have this idea of religion, have imposed that idea on other cultures, other sort of traditions that don't necessarily prioritize belief at all, in the sense that, you know, specifically Protestant Christianity does. And that's a very important thing. What I see much less is that I think all of those definitions, all of those contingent understandings, knowledges of what religion is, are an outcome of constant struggle, constant redefinition, constant redrawing of boundaries between religion and non-religion. Is it the same? Is the boundary in the same place in India, in China, in the UK, or whatever, and not just in between different time periods and so forth? So I think that that was actually the third point about the introduction that I forgot to say, that construction should be understood as an ongoing, the human world should be understood as an ongoing process. So contingency, process, and critique, those are the three points I think I'm making the introduction. So I would like to see more of that idea, that even when there are some very solid looking constructions of religion, the way in which we understand what is religion and non-religion and you know, everything in between, those are still, you know, they look solid, but they are still contingent. They could change when somebody else does something else and so forth. I mean, the whole debate between kind of religion and spirituality, that's a quite recent thing.
Yeah.
And seems to, you know, take up a lot of energy in some parts of the field. And that's a good example of this kind of whole new construction of a new category, at least a new understanding of the word spirituality. And that's the discussions and the critiques and the redefinitions and so forth are an example of this process, that how do we know about religion? That's exactly what it is about. And we will never, of course, I mean, when we talk about paradigms in the social sciences or the humanities, although humanities don't really talk about paradigms much, as much as I understand it, but they never paradigms in the same sense as you know, Thomas Kuhn talked about them, because they're really about sort of our favorite ways of understanding things. It's not like the empirical reality tells us that there's only one way of understanding this thing. But they're rather, we're, social sciences are much more about passion rather than you know, the evidence telling us that we need to change.
Yes.
And that's why that's also an important thing to understand. And that's why seeing this, these kind of understandings of religion, both academic and also on the ground, you know, I'm spiritual but not religious, that kind of stuff, as an ongoing process. And not just something that flows smoothly, but which is continuously contested and critiqued and argued in many ways. So it's a struggle, although that sounds quite dramatic, but, you know, struggle in the sort of not-so-dramatic sense.
Well, we could certainly have an ongoing process of discussion, but I'm going to have to wrap it up. But it came nicely full circle back to where we started. I think this will have been a very useful, illuminating introduction if you're unaware of this kind of approach, but also a bit of a call to arms as to, you know, the need for these kind of approaches. So I'm going to say thanks very much, Titus.
Thank you.
So that interview was recorded when we were in London, a mere 2 and a bit weeks ago.
Indeed.
Sometimes there can be quite a chronological distance between when these interviews are recorded and they go out, but currently we're in a very fresh phase. So
yeah.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Thanks to Titus for recording that interview. One I've been wanting to do for a long, long time.
Absolutely. We've had it on the... It's been in the potential podcast tab of our shared document for quite some time, so it's always good when that happens.
I'm gradually sort of trying to fill in all of the bits in a long series on critical theory. So we've had Marx, we've had... social constructionism. Hopefully we'll get... I've got... one interview hopefully lined up on Foucault. I've got one on discursive methodologies. So yeah. Hopefully in another 3 or 4 years' time, we'll have the whole lot done.
Yeah, we'll package it up and sell it to you for an extortionate rate.
Boom.
We're not saying too much this week because a couple of weeks ago we talked on a bit, but we've got an interview from Tommy Coleman coming up next week with Will Gervais on Religion and Theory of Mind. So that's definitely a Tommy interview.
Yeah, and good to get another interview from Tommy back in the series. Very much a Tommy kind of a mixture of psychology and cognitive study there. Always interesting. And more critical studies actually coming up the week after that, hopefully. But we won't say too much about that.
Yeah.
Not yet.
We've got another few interviews in place, but we just haven't quite settled on the schedule yet, so we'll leave that tantalising hook.
Yeah, there. Hanging. But other than that, no real news happening here. We are starting to think about the IAHR. That's going to be the International Association for the History of Religions.
Yeah.
Happening in Erfurt in August.
Quite a crew.
Yeah.
Quite an RSP crew, quite an Edinburgh crew.
I think it's shaping up to be the biggest RSP event yet. And given how infrequently these happen, it may be the biggest of all time. So we'll see.
Yeah. I guess what we want to be doing 5 years from now is thinking about the next RSP.
We'll be hosting the next one, yeah.
Yeah. But who knows, in that sort of time scale, we've got no idea what's going to be happening.
Absolutely. Well, I think they've done them on all of the continents so far, apart from Antarctica. So perhaps in 2020, the RSP can host the IAHR Congress in Antarctica.
Since there's probably no university there and just...
We'll do ice base,
yeah.
Zebra or whatever it's called. And fly in a lot of beer and a lectern and some PowerPoint, and that's, we're done.
Make a lectern.
Yeah, we'll just make a lectern, carve it out of ice.
Yeah. Anyways, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Google+, all the Amazon, but most importantly,
thanks for listening.